This is Newstalk 1590 KVTA. I'm Lynn Fairley. Welcome back to the Lynn Fairley and Fabulous Friend Show. Today's show was recorded because I am presently down at the St. Patrick's Day Parade. A wonderful parade. We talked about it earlier in the week, and I'm sure those of you who enjoy that are there, and the rest of you who are not, please enjoy this show. I have a very, very interesting guest. Her name is Pam Riss. Welcome to the Lynn Fairley and Fabulous Friend Show.
Thank you. So nice to be here.
It's my pleasure. And she picked this as her theme song to kickstart this show.
If I ever get around to living, putting my things away in the drawers and in the closets, and there I'll stay.
Wow, that's a beautiful song, Pam. I'm really glad you picked that.
Every day you start with John Mayer's A Good Day, but I'm glad you liked it.
So do you start every day with John Mayer?
Absolutely. I commute into Ventura. I've got about a 45-minute commute, and he's going for about 40 of those minutes every day.
Well, yeah. Excellent, and welcome again.
Thank you.
Now, you've gotten around to living quite a bit of your week over at the Ventura County Grand Jury, and you are now currently the foreperson.
That's right.
The grand jury.
That's right.
So before we know a little bit more about you, I'm going to say, just for the listener's sake, just kind of define what the grand jury is. It's a legal body empowered to conduct official proceedings and investigate potential criminal conduct and determine whether criminal charges should be brought. A grand jury may compel the production of massive amounts of documents and compel sworn testimony of witnesses to appear before it. Grand jury is separate from the courts. This is what I want to really make a distinction here. It is very much separate from the courts. Pam's going to explain this better than I, which do not preside over its functioning. It's oddly, the United States and Liberia are the only countries that retain grand juries still, even though some other common law jurisdictions formally employed them. Later on, we're going to get into kind of the origins of the grand jury and the history of it. But right now, we want to know a little bit, a lot more, about Pam Riss, who is here to represent our current grand jury. Tell us about your background, how you got, let's go way back. Were you interested in debate? Were you interested in politics? Were you interested in communication as a kid?
You know, it's a circuitous path. I'm originally from Detroit and, you know, grew up there in the glory days of Motown and all that. Went to school there, got a degree, worked in banking, interestingly. Left that area in the early 80s because the recession had just crashed the place. And came out here working for another bank and traveled internationally. Loved that. But it's always been about analysis and communication. I've been in Ventura County since the early 80s as well, and it's a fabulous place to live. People from my family love coming out here to visit, especially, you know, in this time of year. But it's been a great place to raise a family. I've got a couple of kids I've raised in East County and have worked, went back and got a master's degree. And
in what?
From Cal Lutheran in counseling and marriage and family therapy.
Oh,
so kind of made a left turn, but you know.
No, that's all right.
Yeah, I've enjoyed that. Yeah. So I've worked in psych and worked in mental health for a number of years, and I'm kind of semi-retired at this point. So, you know, I'm kind of at the point in my life where it's about giving back and learning more about the community and what I can give back to the community.
So you're getting around to living.
Getting around to living. A lot of ways to live a life.
Excellent.
A lot of ways.
So you applied for, just like all of you may, and we'll get to that in just a second, as to how you can participate. You can actually have a voice and really make a difference. So you applied for the grand jury, I guess it would have been a year and a half ago?
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in there.
Right.
And
right.
Served an entire year as can we call it a position? Because everybody kind of serves the same way the first year, yeah?
As a juror.
As a juror.
Right,
okay.
Right. So people come from all walks of life. And that's what makes the jury the most powerful, strong, is diversity. Everybody brings something different. We have different lives, different backgrounds. And so we have people come from all over that have done different things. And we all serve as jurors our first year, just kind of trying to figure out how it all works and what we bring. And absolutely.
So it is not, let's talk about what it is not, because it can get confused.
Okay.
And confusing. With what you might think of a jury, and that is that you're requested, you're required to be on a jury, and you show up and you go to court and you sit through a trial. It's absolutely not that.
It is not that. And that, when we get, people get that little postcard in the mail, we call that going for jury duty, but it's really what they call petit jury, which is a small jury. And that means that, you know, it's a jury of peers. And you are asked to serve on a jury, if selected, for a 12-man jury for the length of a trial, which can be a couple days, a couple months. The grand jury is an entirely different kind of animal. It's called grand, which means large. We have 19 members. And Ventura County is a little bit different in that we have two grand juries, and most people don't know that. We have a criminal grand jury, which is selected from that same group of people that show up with their little postcards. And if they happen to be there on what I would say a lucky or an unlucky day, depending on your point of view, you could be selected to serve, and that's reviewing the documents and such from the district attorney that you mentioned earlier to figure out if they're going to indict or bring charges against. And they can serve up to 90 days. But we also have a civil grand jury, which is entirely separate, that is kind of the best kept secret around. People have no clue. And we apply and go through an interview and vetting process, and then we serve for 1 year, and we have the option to return for a second year.
Now, when you say it's the best kept secret, that's a shame. And that's partly why we're doing the show today, mm-hmm. is to make sure all of you out there in all of Ventura County, the farthest reaches, it's a big signal, this radio station, know that you can be on this civil grand jury and you may apply. I think you're going through a recruiting process right now.
We are. We actually have been trying to get the word out there. We go and do speaking engagements all around the community because we want to educate people about the grand jury. And as you say, we want to have people realize that anyone can be on the grand jury. So we like to have people from all walks of life, all parts of the county. The county is very, very diverse. And, you know, we joke and say we don't want to have 19 retired police officers from Simi Valley, and we don't want to have 19 retired teachers from Ventura. We like to have a nice mix from all around the county. So we're trying to get the word out. The deadline is April 7th. And,
You were saying there was an op-ed recently in a newspaper. Talk about that a little bit so they get the idea of how actually interesting, incredibly interesting this is.
Sure. We were all very entertained, I guess would be the word. Back in January, there was an op-ed piece that appeared in one of the Orange County papers, and they had kind of a pro and a con, and one of the writers suggested that grand juries were nothing more than glorified civics classes for senior citizens.
So not true.
So, you know, that's kind of a real misnomer. Just because the reality is that a lot of the people that serve on the grand jury are seniors, for the simple reason that people who are younger are raising families and pursuing careers, and they don't have the time available to put in 30 plus hours a week, which is what we do. But we have people that come from all kinds of backgrounds that are very technical, that have great training and experience, and so they can do some pretty serious work, and we have had an impact on this community. So, you know, the whole civics class for senior citizens was inappropriate.
Very inappropriate. So that means you can still apply. You don't necessarily have to have a scientific or a technical background at all. You could just be interested in doing something brand new, so you don't have to come with any experience or a degree in this, that, or the other thing. Not at all.
Not at all.
Because you're a microcosm of the community. So the more diversity, in terms of age and color, anything, and culture, the better. Because the more diverse this particular group is, the more they're going to represent the entire community. So if someone out there is interested in doing this, how do they go about applying?
Okay. We have a website. Ventura County website has a section. If you look in departments, there's grand jury is listed. And if someone wants to tap on that, they can go to the grand jury section and find an application and just fill it out. And it's some pretty basic information. We just want to know a little bit about you, what makes you interested, what kinds of things have you done, where do you live, etc. And it's pretty straightforward, just a couple pages, and you can send that in through April the 7th.
What's the website again, the whole thing?
Countyofventura.org? Well, if you just go on Google and say Ventura County, then you can see the official website and click on there. It's pretty easy to find.
Okay, and then click through the grand jury and they get the application.
Click through
and
to
then
grand jury.
Email it, just submit it online.
Most people print it out and write it and just fill it out, but yeah.
And mail it?
You can mail it, hard copy, or you can just fill it out electronically and submit it that way.
Now, I've been in these chambers, and I brought one of the judges with me to an open house. You had one yesterday. And the judge was shocked to see that your chambers were better than his chambers over there at the courthouse. They're very luxe. Oh, my gosh. You guys have the best chambers probably in the whole entire county, maybe even included Santa Barbara.
Well, I hate to tell you, we have the best chambers probably in the whole state. You know, we do go to functions and do trainings and such all around the state and meet people everywhere, and it's almost embarrassing. We hear people that say, we work out of a basement, we work out of a conference room, they gave us one office, we can use it once a month, and then we have these beautiful big chambers and offices. Every juror has their own workstation with a personal computer, and the county has treated us very well.
It's beautiful. And yeah. And the courtroom is very, very luxe. Oh, my goodness. You guys are spoiled.
Very spoiled.
So it's a very nice place to work. Now, when you say it's 30-plus hours, it's like Monday through Thursday for, 6 hours a day? Is that basically your schedule?
You know, it varies quite a bit. Our regular schedule is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But keep in mind, every year the jury can set their own schedule. We kind of reinvent ourselves every year. For last year and this year, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we have meetings in the morning, and in the afternoons we do things like briefings. We have people come from, for example, the district attorney, the sheriff, the CEO, all the supervisors from the Board of Supervisors, different agency heads, et cetera. They come in and they brief us, city managers. So they come in and they brief us, or we may go out there. So the afternoons are spent with those things. Then once we get through the year a bit and we are active with our investigations and we're writing reports, then we have a little longer days. So it kind of, 3 days a week, 4 days a week. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really easy to manage.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, there's a stipend of some sort. You make a little bit of money and you're paid mileage for driving, that sort of thing.
Exactly. We're essentially volunteers, but the county pays us a stipend of $25 a day plus mileage at the IRS rate. So, yeah.
So it's a little bit of your gas money or your
Absolutely.
Gas.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is the people you meet, the people you work with, and the impact you have. It's truly interesting. You may not think so, and I don't know why it's a well-kept secret. Because, for example, tell us about the great success you've had with a no-kill shelter as one of the topics that, just to give an example of the type of things you might address.
Okay. Back in 2011-12, the grand jury decided to take a look at the Ventura County Animal Services and the shelter. There was a lot of concern about the idea that we had a kill shelter. So we went out and took a look, did a lot of interviews, visits, research, etc. And they found some things that were, pretty disturbing. We found that 30% of the dogs were being euthanized. 65% of cats were being euthanized. We found that they had one vet who was so horribly overworked, they had to outsource a lot of the work. If animals came in later in the day, they would have to send them out. So it was difficult to get information. If you put a phone call in to inquire about a missing pet, for example, you could be on the phone for a very long time. So there were a number of things that just weren't working very well. So they found that the staff there, you know, they had a lot of volunteers, and staff were going into it with, you know, great intentions, animal lovers wanting to make a difference, and really compassionate people, but they were experiencing very severe burnout because there just wasn't enough people, there weren't enough resources to go around to really do the job the way they wanted to. So we recommended in our report that we consider going to a no-kill shelter, for example. We also suggested that they consider bringing, instead of outsourcing the vet services, to bring another vet on staff to provide more support and, you know, do some things like jazz up their website, make it more user-friendly. And so, you know, these things all cost money, and the Board of Supervisors received it, you know, very enthusiastically, but at the end of the day, it costs money, so they did have to spend some time talking about it. But in 2012, they did direct the county to become a no-kill shelter, and they did add staff to, you know, put that vet, that second vet in place, and they've started doing wonderful things, partnering with the community, with a lot of rescue groups. They do a lot of outreach, and we are now the largest no-kill shelter in the state. So we are very proud of that.
Yeah. How did this come to the attention of the grand jury, and why would it come to the attention of the grand jury?
Well, the grand jury can look at something in a multitude of ways. Most of the time, we receive complaints from citizens who are concerned about something, and that's really what we're all about. They refer to us as the eyes and ears of the county. So anyone that lives in this county that has a concern about something like this, or streetlights, or whatever it happens to be, can write a complaint to the grand jury, and we're required to take a look at everything we get. We may not open an investigation on everything, but we certainly look at it. The other possibility is that somebody on the grand jury sometimes will come in and have something that they feel very passionately about. You know, we also read the newspapers, we go to city council meetings, you know, we're kind of trying to keep our eyes and ears open as well. So there's a couple of ways. This particular one came from a complaint, I believe, from a citizen.
So that's terrific. You can get involved either by being a member of the grand jury, or you, if you have something that is really driving you crazy and it has to do with the county or city services, including law enforcement, mm-hmm. or water, or maybe there's an oil pipe leaking, or the beach isn't clean enough, something mm-hmm. that's just really got your goat, you write a complaint to the watchdog, grand jury, they must reply. They may not go deeply into investigation like they've done with the kill shelter, but they must reply to you. So how do you get that complaint to the grand jury? This is something that's really important for
Absolutely.
Our community to
Again,
know.
Going to the Ventura County website, going to the grand jury section, there is a complaint form that can be downloaded. And if somebody's not that comfortable with computers, because not everyone is, you know, most people are, but there are people who can't, writing a letter is sufficient. It has to be in writing. Somebody can simply write a letter to the grand jury and say, you know, I'm concerned about these things, and spell it out. Give us as much detail as you can. Attach information, pictures, details. And we just ask that you provide your name, address, and phone number. We cannot accept an anonymous complaint. But once we get a complaint in, the grand jury, we have a complaint review group that sits down and we are required to look at every single thing we receive. And we sit around and we discuss it in great detail, and then we make a decision whether it's within our jurisdiction, for example. Because we get letters from people that didn't like President Obama, or they don't like President Trump. That we can't change for them. We're limited to looking at local issues, but once we look at it and say, yes, this is something that's within our jurisdiction and we think has some value, then we would route it out to one of our committees for consideration to take it on. Everything we receive, we send a letter of acknowledgement saying, thank you for submitting a complaint. We have received it and we are considering. Legally, we're not allowed to communicate after that point to say, yes, we've taken it on, or no, we have not.
So how would they know if their complaint has been addressed? I mean, That would be a little frustrating.
It's very frustrating. People do get frustrated. We'll get frequent calls back. What are you doing? What are you doing? We do send the letter. We have very strict mandates about how we can communicate and what we can do. We can only send the letter acknowledging. So, yes, people do get frustrated, and they want to know what's happening with my complaint. Where are you? So we have to do our work, our field work. We have to write a report. That takes months. And I try to be very clear with people on the phone when they call to say what's going on. Please be patient. You know, if we take this on as an investigation, it's going to take some months to get it done. And then we publish the reports. We put press releases out to the newspaper. The reports, every report we've written probably for the last 15 years at least, is on the website. They're always published on the website, so anybody can go read those.
I have a couple I received recently. Back in October, I got the press release that said that the Ventura County Grand Jury posted its responses to the 2015-2016 reports. It's a big, huge, thick book with lots of stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that went out to myself and who else? Everybody else in media, newspapers, that sort of thing?
Newspapers, radio, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is this the only time the person who might have made a complaint would find out? Is this the only way the person who made a complaint would find out whether or not their issue was addressed?
The only way they would know is by seeing the report. You are correct. When the reports are issued, we do individual press releases for each one. It depends on whether the media picks that up or not. So, for example, last year we wrote a report on the Ventura County crude oil pipelines. There was an oil spill in Refugio, and everyone became very alarmed after that happened because, the damage, the economic or the environmental damage, you know, there was wildlife that were killed. The cleanup was massive, expensive. It was a huge disaster. And, you know, they're still looking into that. But it raises the question, what if this happened in our county? So we did an investigation into that last year, which was very, very technical, and made our presentation and basically said that the county does not have a lot of authority to really control the quality of pipelines, but they have access to information so they can keep their kind of finger on the pulse about what is running under our county and could we be at risk. So that report, for example, went out, and the Board of Supervisors actually have expressed tremendous gratitude to us for bringing that to their attention. Yesterday at our open house, the CEO was there and specifically mentioned this because they're now looking into it to prepare a report so they can be very aware of what the state of the pipelines are under this county. But this report went out in April. So it went out in April. We did a big press release. It was on the website. It's available for everyone. Each time we issue a report, we did one on the safety in the Phoenix schools last year, for example. We always look at the jails, and most people don't know that. We are mandated every year to visit every detention facility in this county. We do an inspection of all the jails and all the police holding cells. So we write a report on that as well. So we issue these as they finish up, and it's usually April, May, somewhere in there, March, April, May. We're in that season now. And then once they're all complete, then we issue the final kind of bound version, and we put out a release when we get answers back to all of our comments.
So could someone have this bound book of reports, someone in the public come and get their own copy?
They could not.
Okay.
We're kind of, the county has kind of gone over to this paper reduction.
Oh, digital.
We don't
right.
print very many of these anymore.
Okay.
We used to print them by the cases. Now we print the minimal amount. There are a few available, but we try to limit that. Everything's digital now, so we really encourage
okay.
people to go on the website.
So they could go to www.ventura.org/grand-jury,
mm-hmm.
and there, not only the reports, but the responses are there, as well as those of the prior years. So you can access that without any trouble, not a passcode or any issue.
Nothing, no,
if,
it's very easy.
If you're a scientific type, you're interested in the crude oil pipeline report that you'll find on that website, as well as all the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that if I made a complaint, I could eventually then find out whether or not you addressed my complaint, and then a report on it would be online. But that's the only way I'd ever know if my complaint was addressed.
That's correct.
Now, that, what is, why? I mean, that, is that because you would get like 100 calls a day and emails and what's going on and just too much, let's say, protest, if you will? If you were responding to and having to call back and emailing and talking to all the complaints that came in, is just too time consuming?
There would be a deluge, but but the mandate does say that we are not allowed to respond, correct?
Okay. Huh.
It's very frustrating for us. I just want to make that clear.
I bet it's really frustrating. So I got another one just the other day, March 2nd, actually. So I don't know if this was a complaint, but it says the Ventura County Medical Center accreditation status. The 2016-17 grand juries issued a report on the accreditation status of the Ventura County Medical Center. It's a condition for hospital licensure in California and for reimbursement by the federal government for services provided to patients insured under Medicare or Medi-Cal. Now, without accreditation, a hospital would have to close. The report includes the Medical Center Santa Paula Hospital and related outpatient facilities. Basic accreditation is by the Joint Commission, formerly known as the Joint Commission for Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations. So at the last full survey in June of 2014, this hospital was approved for 3 years, the maximum allowed. Subsequent follow-up reports have demonstrated satisfactory performance. Hospitals may voluntarily seek accreditation from other national organizations. The medical center has sought and received accreditation from at least 3 others. These reports reveal a pattern of continuous improvement in the quality of care right here in Ventura County. Now, do you know if this started out as a complaint? Or was it just an accreditation procedure?
This did not start out as a complaint. This was something that we were looking at and saying, we want to know what the quality of our med center is and their accreditation. Are they doing the minimum? Are they well received? And we were very pleased to find out that they go out of their way to get additional accreditation, which speaks very well of them.
It does indeed. And I'm happy to know our hospital's in good shape. All right, at this time in my show, every single time, we break with the Shoemaker Brothers, and I thank a veteran and tell you a little story. We'll do that right now.
Dancing girl, fell so hard that it rocked my world. Headed off to a place in Iraq, and that man that she loved never made it back. Take me out.
All right, I have a story from a listener. I love this, and I encourage you all to email me and hit me up on Facebook. Lynn Fairley is spelled L-Y-N Fairley, just as it sounds, F-A-I-R-L-Y. And send me a message there or your stories. I got one by email from Brent Jackson. Born December 28th in 1919 in Miami, Arizona, Solomon Brent Jackson spent most of his early years working on the family's farm and later as a chief in a local hotel. Grew restless and set out to California, where he caught a bus, headed to the state of Washington, where he thought he'd get into the logging business. But young Solomon, at 18 years old at the time, a change of heart, would find himself enlisting in the Marine Corps at Camp Pendleton, San Diego. Finished basic training later and was sent to China for a brief stint. Can you imagine that? So, let's see, he is 29, so it's like 1927. He's in China. Wonder what it was like there then. So, then December 7th, 1941, our vet of the day, Solomon, was coming off guard duty when the first Japanese planes attacked. While on his way to get breakfast, he and his buddy were strafed by Japanese Zeros. Now, that's an airplane. In fact, you can see a Japanese Zero. There's one completely restored at the Commemorative Air Force Museum right here in Camarillo. By pushing his fellow Marine to one side and diving to the other, that was the only thing that saved their lives. Ran to the armory, where a captain ordered him and some other men to follow him to Hospital Point. It was here that Solomon, some other Marines and sailors would set up a position to fire automatic weapons at the incoming aircraft. They were trying to give cover fire to wounded soldiers and sailors coming over from Ford Island. He performed well in his first battle, but there was a lot more to follow. After Pearl Harbor, now promoted to sergeant, was sent back to San Diego and later sent up the coast to Port Hueneme, where he would train Seabees in preparation for landings in the Pacific. It was here while on a blind date that Solomon Jackson fell in love with Doris, who has an amazing story herself, actually. Doris Navarro, a blind date that would lead to 64 years of a fantastic marriage. Before being shipped out to Australia in 1942, Jack and Doris would marry. Jack would participate in the landings at the Guadalcanal and Okinawa, all with the 1st Marine Division, and Jack would be awarded the Bronze Medal and later receive the Purple Heart. So now he was a master sergeant. By war's end in 1945, Jack and Doris would be reunited and spend the rest of their lives together. Jack would make a career in the old business while Doris would work part-time in the Satakoi Packing House. The rest of her time was spent raising their sons. They built a house on Linden Drive in Satakoi in 1953. They were two very strong-willed, loving, and tough people. How tough? Well, in 1962, Jack had to have his teeth removed, so he came off work at 7 o'clock one Tuesday morning, showered, went to the oral surgeon, had every single one of his upper teeth pulled. Went home, straight to bed, got up 11 p.m., went back to work. The next day, Wednesday, came home, went to the surgeon, and had all of his lower teeth pulled. Came home, went to bed, and went right back to work. That's pain tolerance. Oh, my word. Doris, unfortunately, contracted cancer in 1982 and would lose a breast because of it. She would survive cancer and go to live on 24 more years. Doris and Jack loved music and the family, but they both had a real passion for growing flowers. Their favorite were roses, orchids, and they both instilled in their sons the importance of hard work and sacrifice. Believed in saving up before buying items and having a plan and follow through. And that no matter how strong, talented, or bigger the opposition, don't let anyone ever outwork you. Win or lose, always be a person of integrity. Doris Navarro Jackson passed away April 25th, 2006, and her husband Solomon Jack Brant Jackson passed on March 7th, 2014. Now, this is not a unique story for this time period. There were many Dorises and Jacks who led similar lives at this time. Tom Brokaw highlighted in his book of 1998, these were the people of the greatest generation. Brant Jackson, thank you very much for emailing me your personal story. I love to have stories of veterans and their families in our county. Doris has a whole incredible story all of her own, so I might talk about Doris at another time. One more veteran I want to highlight is just a wonderful story. Once an orphan, Nadja West will become the first black female three-star general. Okay, now this actually happened last year. On Tuesday, February 9th last year, Lieutenant General Nadja West was honored in an official ceremony formalizing her promotion to three-star general, making her the first African-American woman to achieve that rank in the United States Army. And I have a picture of her. She's just adorable. She is also the highest-ranking woman of any race ever to have graduated from West Point, ever. The promotion and ceremony follows this 54-year-old woman's confirmation by the Senate as the new Army Surgeon General and Commanding General, U.S. Army Medical Command, as of December. As such, West will be assisting and advising the Secretary of the Army and the Army Chief of Staff in relation to all health care matters in the Army, in addition to overseeing development, organization, policy direction, and other matters relative to the Army-wide health care system. The Washington, D.C. area native holds a Bachelor of Science in Engineering from the United States Military Academy at West Point and a Doctorate of Medicine from the George Washington University School of Medicine. She's an engineer and a doctor, and now a general, at 54 years old, and was an orphan. She has held previous assignments as Commanding General, Europe Regional Medical Command, Commander of Womack Army Medical Center, Fort Bragg, and Division Surgeon, 1st Armored Division, Army Europe, and 7th Army Germany. Holy smokes. If that doesn't want to make a difference in the world around you, I don't know what does. I found that an incredibly inspiring story. Wasn't that cool, Pam Riss?
That's absolutely amazing.
Isn't it truly? Only 54 and she's done all that. So how about that for inspiring? If you're just tuning in, well, stop doing that. You need to stay tuned in to News Talk 1590 KVTA. I'm Lynn Fairley, and this is the Fabulous Lynn Fairley Friend Show. We've been talking about the grand jury, and it's a very, very interesting organization, a really purposeful and important body of people, which Pam Riss, my guest, is the foreperson. That's like a chairperson.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
So what do you do specifically?
What do I do specifically? I oversee all of the committees, and I attend everything, and it's kind of my job. Somebody calls it herding cats. Nice way of looking at it, but it's quite often the best description. Just making sure that everybody's on task, that people that are struggling get somebody to jump in and support them, that everybody's kind of moving in the right direction. So it's just oversight, really.
Do you provide cat foods and cat treats? No, it's a really lovely place. I don't mean to, you know, joke around. It's probably not an easy job.
No, it's not an easy job. But, you know, a lot of the people that come in, as I mentioned earlier, are older people, starting in mid-50s and up. Our eldest juror, I hope he doesn't mind me sharing, this is 92.
Wow, good for
him.
Wow,
92 years old and puts everyone to shame.
Well, great.
Really lovely man. But a lot of people are used to kind of being loners, doing things on their own, writing, looking into things. So this is a very, very collaborative process where everyone has to work together. And, you know, we all bring personalities into the room. So sometimes those personalities are kind of bouncing off each other like billiard balls. But, yeah.
Well, but if you're 18 and you're interested in politics, maybe you want to study this in college, can mm-hmm. you apply and be a part of the grand jury as a young man or woman?
Absolutely.
Good.
I appreciate you bringing that up. Appreciate you bringing that up. To be on the grand jury, there are a few requirements, and one is you have to be at least 18 years of age, and you have to be a citizen of the county, and we ask that you have lived here for at least 1 year. You have to have a working command of the English language, and they ask, and this is a very high mark here, average intelligence and fair character. So, you know, we are just everyday people, and we come from all over different backgrounds. We really would love the idea of having some young people on the jury. It's usually a time problem, but hey, if somebody was a night student or a college student and they wanted to learn more about government, it would be a fabulous experience. Because a lot of times I notice in this world today, people feel very, very overwhelmed by what they hear going on in the world, and they don't know how they can make a difference, and they feel powerless. And it's a really wonderful opportunity to say, what can I do for my community? How can I learn more about it? And how can I make a difference? Because we look at so many different types of things. So it could be a really great experience for anyone, and a young person for sure.
So let's have someone 18 or 19 sign up. All mm-hmm. right? You go to the Ventura County website, ventura.org/grand jury. You'll find an application there. Write it, mail it, send it, submit it, email it, and then you come in and do what? You have an interview. What happens after that?
Okay, what happens is all of those applications go to our jury services area. When you have your jury duty day, it's that little office right next to you, and they take every one of those applications, and they have to do a DOJ vetting process. So they do background checks on everybody. Once they pass those, they send them over to us. Those of us who are leaving the jury next year, we set up interviews and bring everybody in for interviews probably the last couple weeks of April. And then we kind of screen and do a little summary, and we send that over to the presiding judge. And the judges look through that, and they might call a few people in for interviews. And somewhere around end of May or June, then we send out letters. So it goes through a few hurdles.
So April 7th is your deadline, so you have a little less than a month left mm-hmm. to consider joining the grand jury. Mm-hmm. Now, can they ask questions of anyone prior to submitting an application, just so they kind of understand that process, or just more than just what this radio show is doing today?
Absolutely. I get phone calls every single day. I spend a lot of time on the phone from people calling. I get multiple calls. People are interested, and they want to know. They have questions like, what if I'm going on a vacation? You know, does that mean I can't be on the jury? What if I'm part of a club and I need to go to a meeting on Friday? Or, you know, maybe I don't have a college degree. Are you interested in somebody like me? So we get a lot of those types of questions. And the general number of 477-1600 is the grand jury number. And I, when I'm at my desk, I pick those right up and talk to people. And if not, I call them back the same day.
So that's in the 805 area code, 477-1600. 805-477-1600. Call up Pam Riss. Make her phone ring and ring and ring and ring from now until April 7th. 805-477-1600. And be a member. And no, you don't have to have a college degree. And I imagine you give time off for illness and a little vacation or a wedding or something like that.
Absolutely. It's flexible. We realize that people are volunteers and we have lives, we have families, we have medical appointments, vacations, things like that. And so people do what they have to do.
Do you have to have a minimum number present to make any kind of decisions or recommendations?
It's a majority or simple majority, depending on.
Okay.
Half plus one, usually.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I have something to share about the origins of the grand jury. I thought it was pretty amazing. The first instance of a grand jury can be traced back to the Assizes of Clarendon in 1166, an act of Henry II of England. Henry's chief impact on the development of the English monarchy was to increase the jurisdiction of the royal courts at the expense of the feudal courts. Itinerant justices on a regular circuit were sent out once each year to enforce the king's peace, quote unquote. To make the system of royal criminal justice more effective, Henry employed the method of inquest used by William the Conqueror in the Domesday Book. In each shire, a body of important men was sworn to report to the sheriff all crimes committed since the last session of the circuit court. Thus originated the more recent grand jury that presents information for an indictment. The grand jury was later recognized by King John and Magna Carta in 1215 on demand of the nobility. The grand jury can be said to have, quote-unquote, celebrated its 800th birthday in 2015, so it's 802 now, because of a precursor to the grand jury is defined in Article 61, the longest of the 63 articles of the Magna Carta, executed on the 15th of June in 1215 by King John and by the barons. The document was primarily composed by the Archbishop of Canterbury. He and Cardinal Hugo de Sancto Caro developed schemas for the division of the Bible into chapters, and it is the system of Archbishop Langton which prevailed. He was a Bible scholar, and in the concept of the grand jury, the concept of the grand jury may possibly derive from Deuteronomy 25.1, quote, if there be, quote, right out of the Bible, Deuteronomy 25.1, if there be a controversy between men, and they come unto judgment, that the judges may judge them, then they shall justify the righteous and condemn the wicked. King James Version. Thus, the grand jury has been described as the shield and the sword. How about that? Did you know that?
I did not know that. I've heard watchdog. I've never heard shield and sword.
The shield and the sword, or sometimes the shield for the people. That's okay. Another version of it. And this is from abusive indictments of the government or malicious indictments of individuals. And as the sword of the people, to cut away crime by any private individual or cut away crime by any public servant, whether in the judicial, executive, or legislative branches.
Okay.
So that's the origin and the history. You may take that back to the grand jury, and it's continued in this little second bit right there. So you can now know you're the short sword and the shield.
One more title. Eyes and ears, sword and shield.
How about that?
There we go.
802 years there's been this concept of a jury, a grand jury. And now, you know, some of the more famous cases that have occurred that involve the grand jury, I think one of the ones we remember the most would happen to be the Clinton charge for several scandalous, I'd say, behaviors. That went to a grand jury.
Grand jury.
A criminal grand jury. Again, there is a difference. This one we're talking about, the one you want to join, is not the criminal grand jury. See, again, we need that distinction because people hear about the grand jury, or some of the recent shootings as well, those went to a grand jury, different kind of grand jury.
And in Orange County, they actually have a combined grand jury, so the people that serve there can be asked to work on criminal charges at one point and return to their civil function a little bit later. In this county, we've created two separate grand juries, two separate.
So, Spence, we missed Legal Clarity, of course, because you were the A-plus student of that particular show that demanded your knowledge of the Constitution. So no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on the presentment or indictment of a grand jury is?
Fifth Amendment.
Excellent. See, he never fails. He just knows them all. And he's trying to tell me before I'm halfway through the sentence. Boom. Congratulations. In the early decades of the United States, grand juries played a major role in public matters. During that period, counties followed the traditional practice of requiring all decisions to be made at least 12 of the grand jurors. 12 people would continue a bare majority. Any citizen could bring a matter before a grand jury directly, from a public work that needed repairing to the delinquent conduct of a public official to a complaint of a crime, and grand juries could conduct their own investigations. Now, that is really very much kind of the nuts and bolts of the description of this grand jury.
That's correct, yes. We have access. We have subpoena power. We can bring any official in. We can request copies of any documents as members of the grand jury. And, you know, it's interesting, the judge came to our chambers yesterday during our open house, and she made a really big point of making people understand that even though she is the presiding judge and we do send all of our reports to her, they are not, we are entirely independent. So they want to look at it for legal clarity and such to make sure that we haven't stepped over any lines or expose the county in any way, but the particular substance of what we look at, they completely stay away from what we do, and they allow us to investigate anything that we feel could be of value.
Who's that judge?
The current presiding judge is Patricia Murphy. They take on that role for 2 years, and she just started on January 1st of this year.
Would you say the jury is made up of mostly women, mostly men, half and half? Kind of what's the
You know, it varies from year to year. Right now we have more men than women. I think we have 11 men and 8 women right now. So it's a mix. Last year it was almost 50-50. So it varies from year to year.
Well, all states currently have provisions for grand juries today. Approximately half of the states employ them. Mm-hmm. And 22 of the states require their use mm-hmm. to varying extents. The Constitution of Pennsylvania required between 1874 and 1968 that a grand jury indict all felonies. How about that? That's a long time, too. That was nearly 100 years that we're doing that in Pennsylvania. Again, a criminal jury.
Right.
Now, the St. Patrick's Day parade is wound up downtown probably about this time. And it's now, it's not chaos in a straight line. It's utter pandemonium at this point in time. Probably in Dargins with your green beer and the bagpipes and what have you. I'll be sure to rebroadcast this show at another point in time, possibly again when you start recruiting. But in the honor of Ireland, I want to talk about what they do in Ireland with a grand jury. In Ireland, grand juries were active from the Middle Ages during the lordship of Ireland and parts of the island under control of the English government. That was followed by the Kingdom of Ireland. They mainly functioned as a local government authority at a county level. The system was so called as the grand jurors had to present their public work, proposals, and budgets in court for official sanction by a judge. Grand jurors were usually the largest local payers of rates and therefore tended to be the larger landlords. And on retiring, they selected new members from the same background, so probably white guys that own land. Distinct from their public works function as property owners, they also were qualified to sit on criminal juries hearing trials by jury, as well as having pretrial judicial function for serious criminal cases. Many of them also sat as magistrate judging the less serious cases. They were usually wealthy country gents. Yeah, sure. Farmers, merchants. A country gent, as a member of the grand jury, levied the local tax, appointed the nephews of his old friends to collect them, and spent them when they were gathered in. He controlled the boards of guardians and appointed the dispensary doctors, regulated the diets of the paupers, inflicted fines, and administered the law at petty sessions. Now, if I had an Irish accent, that would have probably sounded better. From 1691 to 1793, dissenters and Roman Catholics were excluded. Catholics absolutely excluded from membership. The concentration of power and wealth in a few families caused a lot of resentment over time in Ireland. The whole local government system started to become more representative from the passing of the municipal corporations. Grand juries were replaced by the democratically elected county councils by the Local Government Act 1898 as regards their administrative functions. After the formation of the Irish Free State in 1922, grand juries were not required at all, but they persisted in Northern Ireland until abolished by the Grand Jury Abolition Act of the Parliament of Northern Ireland, just as early, late or recent as 1969. So that's the history of the grand jury in Ireland in honor of St. Patrick's Day.
There you go.
Yes, there we go. So I also want to thank some folks that helped me put the United States Coast Guard in the parade. The young men and women of the United States Coast Guard are absolutely astonishing. I've had a tour of the facility, and you may too. They operate the Black Tip, the only cutter we have in our area, from Point Magoo all the way up to Morro Bay. That's their territory, and they have to tour that. They go out for days on end, all day, 24/7. So I know you've been hearing recently my safe boating PSA, public service announcement, and so this is the time of year when we're getting ready to go out boating. The Coast Guard is open. You may have a tour. They have a big expo coming up in May. It's a safe boating expo. It's so much fun. All kinds of vendors are out there. You can tour the boats. You can see the helicopters, and you can meet the Coast Guard. There were a couple people that helped me put them in the parade, so I want to shout out to the Montecito Bank for helping them, for giving them breakfast. Yes, we had breakfast at the Busy Bee Cafe, another wonderful place. I hope you attend. And the wharf right down here, that massive, it's pet food, it's the boot barn, it's country western clothing, it's, well, boots and gear and saddles and ropes and everything you could possibly need, the wharf. Thank you very much for donating and making it possible for the United States Coast Guard to be in the parade. And by the way, they give a 10% discount to the military. Have you been down to the wharf? It's an amazing place.
Beautiful, fabulous place.
Yeah, it really is. So they also participated, and I wanted to thank them. How much time do we have, Spence? Are we coming down to kind of the end here? A little bit. Yes. Spence, have you been to the wharf?
Numerous times. Yeah, we've done. The wharf has been there for like 80 years.
Has it really?
Used to literally be at the wharf, and then they moved it up to its current place. And they are, if you want good-looking cowboy boots, go to the wharf. You want Levi's, you want Pendleton, something unique, you will find it at the wharf. And if your horse is hungry, you can feed it at the wharf.
Every pet food in the world is there at the wharf at a really, really reasonable price. Good, and, you know, they have something for your cats.
Well, there we go. Yeah.
They may. So, Pam Riss, thank you very, very much for coming to the Lynn Fair and the Fabulous Friend Show. Do you have a parting shot for us? Would you like to say one more time what the application process is, when and how, for anyone who just might have tuned in?
Absolutely. We are accepting applications now for the Ventura County Civil Grand Jury through April the 7th. You can get an application online by going to the county website, fill it out electronically and submit it, or print it and send in a hard copy through the mail. We are looking for anyone in this county who is over the age of 18. We would love to have some younger people. You have to be a U.S. citizen, live in the county for 1 year, speak English well enough to be able to read documents and write reports, and we would love to have you. So please consider sending in an application.
Or call. 805-477-1600. 805-477-1600. Pamela answered the phone. Is there one thing that happened to you, besides becoming the foreperson, or a really interesting or crazy or outstanding event that had happened to you in this last 2 years you care to share? Anything really, really unusual?
Unusual? Well, one thing that I would say is that as grand jurors, we have the opportunity to see so much of what goes on in this county. And we got to tour the search and rescue group last year and see all those wonderful helicopters that they use to go out and rescue people. And it was really awesome. We toured the airports. We did tours through the harbor. So you really get a sense of all the wonderful things going on in this county. It's a beautiful place to live.
That's a great point. So you're not just sitting in the chambers all day long writing reports. You're out and about and you're visiting things and you get to see a lot of how this county works.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Excellent. Thanks again very much for coming on the Lynn Fairley and Fabulous Friends Show.
My pleasure. Happy to be here. Thank you.
I'll support you with your press releases, and I wish you and your George, your cats, well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening to News Talk 1590, KVTA.